Welcome to the August 8th, 2012 Landmarks Preservation Commission meeting. First item on the agenda is roll call. Those present are Chair McIntyre, Vice Chair Maddox, Commissioners Chase, Eckley, Jensen, Ray, and York, and ex officio Buffington. Second item on the agenda is consent agenda. Item A, excusal of absences. We have two who have called in, ex officio McClintock and Commissioner Luce. Item 2B is summary of administrative approvals. I move adoption of consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. Item 3, design review. Item A, Murray Morgan Bridge. Mr. Rutherford. Well, I believe we'll begin with the staff report, and then you have a short presentation to give. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the Murray Morgan Bridge, or historically the 11th Street Bridge. It was designed by Waddell and Harrington, built in 1913, and it's listed on the Tacoma, Washington National Registers of Historic Places. It is an early example of a vertical lift bridge with a high deck and a sloping grade. In December 2009, the city took over ownership, operation, and maintenance of the bridge. On March 23, 2011, the commission approved the color scheme, which included painting the Murray Morgan Bridge black and retaining the unpainted aluminum truss over the lift span as it is. Because the bridge is on the National Register of Historic Places and the city is receiving federal funding, the city of Tacoma has signed a memorandum of agreement with the Federal Highway Administration, WashDOT, and the SHPO that outlines the rehabilitation of the bridge. On August 24, 2011, Mr. Rutherford with Public Works presented an update on the Murray Morgan Bridge. The current proposal is to install letter signs on the counterweights, including the words City of Tacoma on one and Port of Tacoma. The application includes the following information. You'll find a rendering of the proposed lettering on the counterweights, noting that a decision still needs to be made as to which exterior face will face the City of Tacoma and which will have Port of Tacoma facing it. The historical photo dated 1915 that shows the lettering on the counterweights and the proposed font, and the decision also is still outstanding as to whether the lettering would be black or white. The approximate lettering height is 48 inches. I have heard that it was reported in one publication at 48 feet. That is not correct, so it's 48 inches. The counterweights are to be painted with a wrought concrete sealer in the Mount St. Helens gray, and the color sample, I believe, is available as well. Staff recommends Secretary of the Interior Standard for Rehabilitation Number 6. Deteriorated features will be repaired rather than replaced. The relevant piece being a replacement of missing features will be substantiated by documentary and physical evidence. Staff analysis, built in 1913, the Murray Morgan Bridge is listed on the Tacoma, Washington National Registers of Historic Places. It is an early example of a center span lift bridge with a high deck and sloping grade, and it is the only kind of bridge of its kind in Washington State. Number two, the Landmarks Preservation Commission has jurisdiction to review and approve or not approve changes to this property, including new construction per TMC 1305.047 prior to those changes being made by virtue of the status as a city landmark. Item three, the proposed new letter signs appear to have been an original sign feature on the counterweights as shown in the historic photo, thus meeting the Secretary of the Interior Standard for Rehabilitation Number 6 previously read. Number four, the current option for the proposed sign color of Mount St. Helens gray as submitted by the applicant, which may appear to meet the Secretary of the Interior Standards for the treatment of historic properties for appropriate methods protecting historic features. Based on this analysis, staff recommends adoption above its findings and refers recommendation to the commission pending the sign color sample presented at this meeting.
Thank you very much. Mr. Rutherford, take it away.
Thank you. Chair McIntyre, Commissioners, my name is Tom Rutherford. I'm Public Works Engineering. I'm the project manager for the rehabilitation of the Murray Morgan Bridge. As part of the rehabilitation, we are sealing the counterweights to prevent further degradation, deterioration. I tried to Xerox this, but it doesn't come out, so I'll just pass it around.
Never get your color.
Yeah, no, that's so the color that we're painting the counterweights is Mount St. Helens gray. As you've heard before, the major portion of the bridge is painted black, which is the color of the top there is a glossy black. The color that we're considering for the lettering is probably the white. I think it will work best. One of the things that I provided a little bit misinformation. The letters that we're proposing are 4 foot wide and 6 foot high, not 4 foot high. We had a proposal from the city council, a city council member, to add the city of Tacoma and Port of Tacoma lettering on the counterweights as a measure to that people would see that as they come into or leave the city. So that's what we're bringing to you today. We will be trying to implement this. Right now, we do have the counterweight in the down position. We will be painting the gray color sealer later this month. And while it's in the down position, if you approve, we would go ahead and paint the lettering on the counterweights.
That's it? All right. I'll open up the discussion to comments and questions from commissioners.
The placements of the signs of Port of Tacoma and City of Tacoma seem kind of obvious to me, but maybe should be discussed.
I think the thought right now is you put it on the side that you're moving towards. So the Port of Tacoma would be on the west side, west face.
Right, yeah.
City of Tacoma would
the
be
direction
on the
east side.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think people would get mixed up in it, but that's the current thought.
If there are no questions or comments, I would. Okay, so please go ahead.
I have a question. This sample lettering shows edging around the letters. It looks like it's black on gray with white edging on it.
That wouldn't be the case.
That's just the halo from the copy.
Not with copy. So just the actual letters.
I guess the only concern I might have is that white on gray might not show up as well as if you had a black edging around it. That would really make it stand
out. Yeah, make it pop out. You're right.
Just a suggestion.
Well, the photo looks, I don't know, maybe it's just my eye, but the photo almost looks like those letters are proud of the face. It almost looks like there's a shadow around it. Or perhaps a black edging around the white lettering.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is a photo from 1915.
Yeah, so I'm sure it's probably the only piece of information we've got, too. So it's
and
all
then it's been photocopied, too. Yeah. So, yeah, you lose.
Yeah, so it's hard to tell.
That would be the only preference I would give for white lettering, because you have white lettering in a historic photo.
I could go along with that.
I think it will show up better.
Any other comments or questions?
Would there be any sort of lighting that would be relevant to that?
There is lighting on the bridge. I don't know. I'd have to look at the lighting plan. I don't believe there's lighting, spotlighting on the counterweights themselves.
Okay.
Is the lighting on the bridge up lighting or down lighting?
Well, we're still going to continue to use the two banks of lighting on the shoreline, which will provide an uplighting effect. The lighting on the bridge itself is primarily for pedestrian and traffic, so it would be down lighting. There is some lighting up on the machinery room level, but that, as you see in the picture, when the bridge is in the down position, the counterweights are up, those lights are also going to be lower. So I don't believe right now we have any plans for lights on the top of the towers.
Other comments? I would entertain a motion at this time.
I'll give it a shot.
All right, go ahead.
All right. I move that the Tacoma Commission adopt the analysis of findings and approve the painting of the counterweights and the color submitted and the application of the lettering as submitted.
I would offer an amendment to take the advisory of a profile line as a suggestion. Do you want to make it as a part of the motion? Ex officio, I wanted to call you. Ex officio Buffington, do you want to make it as part of the motion? Or?
That would be my preference, yes.
All right, would you accept that?
I accept that.
All right.
With that modification, I'll second it.
All right. A motion's been presented and seconded to approve with amendments. Is there discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we will proceed to vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. Motion passes. Thank you very much, Mr. Rutherford.
Thank you.
Want to settle in? Next item on the agenda, 3B, is 511 North K Street, existing carport removed with a new garage to in its place. Jeff Frachineau, is that how it's pronounced?
Frachineau.
Would you like to come up and join us at the table? And we'll begin with the staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a 511 North K Street in the North Slope Historic District. The existing detached carport structure in the multifamily apartment building are non-contributing structures located at this address. This is an application to construct a new detached 32-by-20-foot garage at the rear of the property in the location of the existing non-historic detached carport. The proposed material and design includes a gable 8/12-pitch roof, bevel siding, a 1 north elevation man door, an overhead garage door on the east elevation, board and batten on the east and west elevations gable areas, with 1 vent in the gable area on the west side. The design is attached. Staff recommends the North Slope Historic District design guidelines. I'm just going to, instead of reading the whole text, I just note the design guideline number 1 for height, 2 scale, 3 roof shapes and materials, 6 exterior materials, and 8 for parking location. Staff analysis, modifications to the existing apartment building are exempt from design review as it is a non-contributing structure located in the North Slope Historic District. Item 2, on February 8th, 2012, the Commission discussed the proposed new construction of a detached accessory garage structure on the non-contributing party and requested design review for the purpose of consistency of the design for the new structure. And if you will recall, staff raised that issue at that meeting, requesting guidance for the Commission because this is a non-contributing apartment building. Last year, the Commission modified the district inventory to remove this particular building from the contributing buildings inventory, and that included the carport. So this is going to be a new garage replacing the carport that is being removed, and then the apartment building, the non-contributing apartment building, is currently under construction. The Landmarks Preservation Commission has the jurisdiction to review and approve or not approve new construction on this property. TMC 1305.047 prior to those changes being made because it is in the North Slope Historic Special Review District. Item 4, the new garage is proposed in the rear elevation of the property as a detached structure which will be visible from the alley. The structure will be located in the rear of the property allowing entry from the alley which meets the North Slope Historic District Design Guideline number 9 for parking. Item 5, the proposed new garage with a height of 16 feet appears to meet the North Slope Historic District Guideline number 1 height. Item 6, the garage proposal appears to meet North Slope District Design Guideline number 2 for scale. Item 7, the proposed gable roof with an 8/12 pitch meets North Slope Historic District Guideline number 5 for roof shapes and materials with the goal of between 5/12 and 12/12 pitch. Item 8, the materials for the garage, including bevel siding and some board and batten on the two upper gable areas, appear to be compatible with traditional materials of the Historic District and meets North Slope Historic District Guideline number 6, exterior materials. Staff recommends adopting the above as findings and recommends approval by the Commission.
Mr. Frachineau, is there anything you'd like to contribute or supplement the staff report over and above what you've already presented as far as drawings in the packet application that we've received?
Not really, other than we'd make it all the materials that'll show on the outside will be completely consistent with what we're doing on the main building there. So,
all right.
So it ought to match.
Okay. With that, I will open it up to the discussion to commissioners' comments and questions.
We were out of this property last year.
Right.
On another matter. Just buildings across the street, I think, and we looked at this, and I think that at that point it was clarified as a non-significant.
Yeah, the at that time when the commission went out, this was listed as a contributing building. the staff's professional opinion was that it probably should be considered as a non-contributing building. So at that time, the commission, the Architectural Review Committee on this field visit, recommended to the full commission that it be removed. And so when we did our annual update in the building inventory in the winter, the commission did remove this building from the contributing list. And so the key here is the construction of a new structure, which brings it here. But the other components to what's going on with the building otherwise is not being reviewed by the commission.
Comments or questions for the on the application?
I think it improves the property. It improves the neighborhood and from what it is now. And I'll see if anybody else has any comments, but I'm willing to make a motion on this.
Are there any other comments or questions from commissioners? All right, Commissioner York.
I would move that the Landmark Preservation Commission approve the application for 511 North K Street to take down the carport that's there now and construct the building as outlined in the proposal.
Thank you very much. Is there a second?
Second.
Hearing a motion and second to approve the application, is there discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. Your motion passes. I think
thank you very much.
We'll let you know what happens next, either by written or verbal communication next day or so.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next time on the agenda is item 3C, 817 North I, rear porch, the Craddocks. Hi. Same as before, we will start with a staff report and then you'll be able to supplement however you want to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to note for the commission that there are additional photos that were submitted. They're passed out. So you are looking through them now, showing some additional views of the property based on some of the architectural review committee discussion. So this is a proposal to remodel or, I guess, replace the rear porch, two-story porch, in the same footprint as the existing porch with an exterior stair. This house, constructed in 1890, is a contributing structure in the North Slope Historic District. In 2009, the commission approved the installation of shingle siding and stucco over half timbers, or with half timbers on the front facade. This current proposal is to remove the existing dilapidated rear second or two-level porch and stairs, and in the same footprint area, replace it with an enclosed porch on the second level and potentially on the ground level, or alternatively, keep it open on the ground level. And that's that was part of the architectural review committee discussion. I'll get to in a second. The new stairs will be constructed on the rear side elevation. The purpose is to increase kitchen and living space. The proposed hip roof pitch will match the existing 412 main portion of the house. Painted cedar shakes matching the existing on the house. And the windows will be Gelbwin or Assembler manufacturer aluminum clad with double hung hazel windows. The wood exterior door and one exterior French door will be installed in the ground level. Window trim will match the existing window trim on the house. On August 1st, 2012, the property owner presented the plans to the Architectural Review Committee. Commissioners in attendance included Chair McIntyre, Commissioners McClintock, Eckley, and Buffington, and staff members in Tony Cook. Some of the summary comments included, first, the owners presented a plan to replace the two-level porch with an enclosed two-level porch in the same footprint. An alternative design showed the lower ground level left open. Item two, concern was expressed regarding the visibility from the ice street right-of-way of the proposed side rear staircase, and a comment was made that the more typical location for stairs is on the rear. However, due to topography and space limitations, the owner would like to place the stairs on the side. And so item three, a suggestion was made to provide photos showing the views from High Street, which you have that were added, to where enough the stairs are located on the side elevation. The Architectural Review Committee expressed a preference that the porch be enclosed on both levels. Item six, if the lower level is left open, it was suggested that the braces or the gussets be exposed and not covered with a trim paneling. Item seven, A suggestion was made to provide photos in the rear of the house showing the backyard area. And item 8, it was noted that the house has been significantly modified many times, including the historic period, and it was likely originally a Victorian-style house. Staff recommends the following North Slope Special Review District guidelines. Number 6 for exterior materials, and number 8 for additional construction. Staff analysis, the home on the property is historically significant. It's a contributing structure in the North Slope Historic District. Item 2, the Landmarks Preservation Commission has the jurisdiction to review and approve or not approve changes to this building for TMC 1305.047 prior to those changes being made by its virtue of status as a city landmark. Item 3, the house has been altered, including the installation of asbestos siding and vinyl windows and removal of a one- or two-story front beamer in the 1950s. Gable roof beams were added, possibly at the same time. In 2009, the commission approved the installation of a half-timber and stucco on the upper front facade. Item 4, on August 1st, 2012, the Architectural Review Committee reviewed the proposed plan for an enclosed or non-enclosed two-story replacement addition and rear side staircase. The preference was for a two-story enclosed addition, and there was concern expressed in the visibility of the rear side staircase. Item 5, the current proposal to remove the dilapidated two-story core structure and stairs and install a new one with cladding to match the existing cedar shakes meets North Slope Historic Special Review District Guideline 6 for exterior materials. Item 6, the proposal to match existing aluminum-clad double-hung encasement windows appears to meet North Slope Historic District Guideline Number 6 for exterior materials. Item 7, the proposed rear side staircase will be minimally visible due to topography, location, and landscaping. Therefore, it appears to meet North Slope District Guideline Number 8, which states that while additions to contributing buildings in the historic districts are not discouraged, they should be located to conceal them from the view of public rights of way. The staff recommends adopting the analysis as findings and recommends approval of the application.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the photos. Additional photos are very good. Is there anything that you'd like to add over and above the staff report?
I think just the fact that there is a photo that shows that there is a jog that comes out of the house that's about 2 feet, and the stairs are just over 3 feet. So it will actually
right.
not stick out.
Another page 4.
Right.
It's like,
yeah. My question about the stairs. Once they're in place, they will come over another foot. Do you have a side yard setback back of 5 feet?
Yeah.
You still do that, because I don't see a site.
It should be in the other one.
Yeah.
I remember it from the arch. There it is. Yeah.
Oh,
it's
the excellent. Thank you.
Line drawing.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
All right, any other questions or comments for the applicants? Several of us were there at the ARC meeting, and is there anyone here other than myself that would like to speak to it? Apparently not. If there are no other comments or questions, and you support the recommendations previously given by the ARC, I would entertain a motion.
I move the Tacoma Landmarks Preservation Commission approve the application for construction of porch, change of porch at 817 North I Street as presented.
Second. I would make an amendment that we include the ARC recommendations and also the notations on findings.
Thank you.
Is that acceptable as an amendment?
Very much.
All right. We have a motion and a second to approve the application with ARC recommendations and the notes of finding. Is there a further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Your motion passes. I don't know if you are waiting for further communication from either Tony or Ruben, but I think that will be forthcoming. All right, very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moving on from item 3, design review.
review is item four, chair comments. We have several things in our packets related to a letter going out to the Vice Chancellor for Administrative Services for UWT concerning the Prairie Line Trail and the original artifacts catalog of character defining features, which that was one of the major criticisms of some of the earlier schemes that we saw. In any event, moving on to item five is board briefing. Item 5A, City of Tacoma, building codes, that's right. Homeowner information. Former Commissioner Phil Hill, you want to join us up here?
Yes, please.
I don't know if there's a staff report involved with this. I don't think there is, so why don't you go ahead and take it away.
All right, thank you, Chair and Commissioners. As being a former Commissioner, I thought my personal experience, which I usually don't delve into public, let the public know it very seldom, but I thought this was important enough that it happened to me that the people in the North Slope and this body should at least know about what happened, and I don't know if there's a cure for it, but anyway, I didn't want to bring it to the attention of the public, sort of my Philip Hill public service announcement, if you will. In January, late January, there was a large major snowstorm, and I have a rental house up on Sheridan near 19th Street, and the sewer, city sewer, own sewer, backed up into a number of properties, mine is included. We all had basements. Through the process of that, I hired a plumber to come out and get it, and then I found out it was that there was another company on the street who did abatement work. So I needed to have that about a foot or so of raw sewage in my house with tenants in the house. So I had an abatement company come out, and they cleaned up, and they did a very good job. And Environmental Services came out. They were very, very helpful, but they informed me, too, that I could do a claim for damages against the City of Tacoma, which I proceeded to do. Then became my enlightenment of the legal department of the city and their interpretation of the codes. And what I basically found out was that Environmental Services, they gave me a brochure that basically says, it's in the code now, plumbing code now, that any plumbing fixture below the elevation of the nearest upstream manhole needs to have backflow prevention. It makes perfect sense. My house didn't have it. The house I actually live in doesn't have it. A number of homes I've been in North Slope, they don't have it because they were built quite some time ago. So I put my facts together and sort of educated the legal department because they were quoting the Uniform Plumbing Code, which didn't come into effect until 1945 or so. The home in question was built in 1905. I found out that the city does not believe that grandfathering is a legal term, so nobody can get any further with that. The other thing, too, is that I ended up, which was kind of fun, I went to the city library to research the 1905 revised charter of the City of Tacoma, and which would apply to my home and any home before that or all at that time. Curiously enough, I found out that the main sewer in my house and a number of houses on that street were built at the exact same time. I had and the process to get a building built, and this is not just residential, I'm talking commercial, any building in town. There was a building application process, there was a building department review, there was inspections not only by the building department but also by the health department. So I was thinking, okay, well, I've met all of the things that I needed to do. My house was built to code. There's only one thing in the charter said that, and this is Mark will, you will understand, that when we, as architects, do things, with the code, we have to be very, very specific of what words mean, what they're defined by. The charter said that catch basins below a building need to have backflow prevention. Well, I got a hold of my certified plumber and says, is my floor drain a catch basin? It is not. Is it below my building? It is not. So I provided that information to the legal department, where they then finally went to talk to a building official. And then I had another eye-opener that the building officials sort of redefine the term of what a catch basin is to meet, I believe, what legal wanted them to say. So anyway, long story short is there's two things here that I would like to make people aware of. There's a majority of buildings, residential or commercial, in the city of Tacoma that if anything happens to them, even though they were built prior to the existing codes, they are up to their own devices to understand the code and understand how the process would work to make a claim. The other thing, which is more important to me, is that I see this as a potential huge health risk. I'm fortunate that none of my tenants got sick from anything that was in the raw sewage. I mean, who knows what's in there? But this applies, like I said, to other buildings in town with basements below street grade. The city has the information. Environmental Services has a brochure, and they definitely told me that it is not their practice nor their duty to inform the public. It is up to us to read the charter and the municipal code. So my main concern is the city does, I don't believe, is practicing due diligence in protecting the health of the citizens of Tacoma. And since this has happened to a number of homes, I really do think that more people need to be aware of to take proactive steps to check out their plumbing and make sure they got the backflow preventer so it doesn't happen to them. So let's see. Yeah, so that's pretty much it in a nutshell. So
thanks very much. Are there questions or comments from commissioners? This is not an actionable item, but no. As it's just purely for informational, but definitely houses in the North Slope and the Wedge are definitely affected by this because most of those houses were built prior to 1930.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there an easy way to tell if a house has a backflow
preventer?
Run a camera down it.
Yeah, you need to have a plumber come out and look at it. My suspicion is that they don't because, like I said, the plumbing codes at the time are now being reinterpreted to meet what the preferred outcome is. So,
right.
But more than likely, you don't.
Well, the term that we use for a catch basin now is a precast block that has a leveling, a water leveling device in it for outflow, and what you have in a drain in a basement is not that. It is just a drain directly to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so,
sewer, right.
Yeah. And you know, the curious thing too is that I was informed that the building department cannot give legal advice, which I know. But it's an interesting thing is that we, as architects, go to them all the time for advice on how to interpret a code if we're doing something right. So they're giving us advice until they're in a conflict mode with the legal department. So. They basically, in my mind, redefined the code, and I don't know, it's kind of, it's for, I don't know, I'm upset about it because it cost me a lot of money, about $5,000 out of pocket. I did get reimbursed, I'm getting reimbursed about $1,900, so anyway, it was, I thought it was
frustrating.
Yeah.
Question from staff.
Sure, go ahead.
I was going to ask, did you wind up putting a backflow preventer in your rental house then?
I have not yet, no.
Do you know how much? How expensive that is?
I'm waiting to get an estimate from my plumber. So, yeah, it's probably, well, it depends on what type you put in. It could be very, according to the Environmental Services guy, they're pretty easy to put in. But the one I talked to about my plumber, it could potentially be, you know, $1,200 or so, depending on what type it is. So, how much labor is involved.
Right.
And it is in concrete slab, so, yeah. But,
majority of the money involved in replacing one is getting access to the sewer line so that you can open up a section line and insert it in there once you put it back over and order in, which is probably a $35 item.
Is that normally done at the street or inside the house? Does it make a difference?
It doesn't make a difference. It can be done pretty much any place along the line and in the side sewer between the drop to the city's line and the house itself.
Ruben had a question.
Commissioner Buffington actually asked my questions.
Right. Yeah, he actually got off cheaper than my neighbor got off. It was $6,000 for him to do it. total, and he had a backflow preventer put in.
Yeah.
And for that same reason.
The city is trying, I think, to in remodels and in upgrading of homes to, first of all, get homeowners to have their sewers, their side sewers, between which is the sewer line between the house and the city's line out the street, have that line camered so that there is a record of what's in there, whether there's a backflow divert or not. The other thing is that when a remodeling contractor does a substantial remodel of the house, they have them do the camera work and submit a copy to the city as a part of that process. So they're at least making some efforts. That doesn't say anything about existing.
Sure.
They're not advising anybody that has an existing house to or demanding that they do anything.
So. Yeah. No, because we assume that our homes are built to the code at the time and that we're safe, I guess, if you will, but we're not.
Being a structural engineer, I'll tell you that the codes have gotten much, much more stringent.
Sure,
too.
Right.
So
yeah,
things
right.
that were built 20 years ago don't meet code now.
Yes,
that's true.
Exactly.
So, I mean, yeah. Code's an evolving thing as well. So,
Commissioner Howe, I believe you've had.
Okay. Just I've had that presumption. So we have a house on North 19th, too, and there's just this hole in the basement floor where the main sewer line
exactly.
comes in.
Yep.
And all the other, same thing on North 4th at
right.
1905. Basement.
There's
floor.
Thousands and thousands of properties that could be affected.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I presumed what happened if it backed up.
Yeah. And I was fortunate because my basement was not finished, so I saw concrete floor, concrete stem wall. So it was fairly simple for them to clean and abate. But if it was more complex than that, I'd have been pretty something. So.
Yeah. Finished basement would be a mess.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything would go.
Any other comments or questions from commissioners? Thank you very much.
Sure.
Good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
Thanks for bringing that in.
Okay, thank you.
Finishing that item 5A, we are on to item 6, board business. Item A, it design guidelines, the draft. And I'll let staff take over from here.
Okay, I'll try to keep this pretty brief. As the commission is aware, one of the project lists for this year was to update or upgrade or overhaul the existing design guidelines for the Wedge and North Slope Historic Special Review Districts. What you have in front of you is a draft of this. Is sort of last year we did a kind of quick and dirty just to get the design guidelines in effect. Commissioners will recall that before the 2011 code update, the design guidelines actually sat in the ordinance, which was pretty cumbersome. They hadn't been updated since the mid-90s. This is an attempt to take those existing guidelines and what was the guidance and intent of those guidelines to make them a little easier to use in terms of typical kinds of projects. To make them consistent with and incorporating the Secretary of the Interior standards, which the old design guidelines did not do. And also to reflect more accurately the conventions that the Commission operates under for certain kinds of projects. And so I've been working, actually, he's not here today, but with Commissioner McClintock on some of these issues. This is, the first look in a long time the Commission has been able to have on these design guidelines. And so I expect some feedback and suggestions and so forth, and keeping in mind that there's some rough spots in this draft too. Another thing that we were trying to do is sort of add a policy statement or a position about historic preservation and sustainability, and where the two kind of fit together. So you'll see the page there that shows the gas can building. Which is a National Trust classic from the 80s, I think. And so they're hybrid. Just walking through, you'll see some language is actually from the old guidelines. Some has been tweaked a little bit. They're divided into two sections. The section 3 is for the alteration of existing buildings. Section 4 is much briefer. For new construction, which there are very few developable lots actually in the North Slope Historic District or in the Wedge currently. And so that's where the existing language sort of that stayed mostly intact. And the reason why is because new construction and alteration to existing properties are fairly different from one another. And so it was really the key issues that this commission faces a lot of times, I think, are with windows and window retrofits, with things like siding and exterior materials, and and probably garages, I think, are some of the kind of bread and butter of the commission. So we tried to work a little more with that. Some suggestions also we included, for instance, the just a reference to the Public Works construction standards for things like driveways, just letting people know they're in both the jurisdiction of the commission, there's a standard plan for them, as well as including the district exemptions. And sort of the idea then is this is sort of a user's manual as much as anything. I've managed to cut this draft down from about 30 pages to I think 17 or 15, which is increases the chances that somebody might read it. And so at any rate, so these are offered for the commission's review. The only thing that any feedback now or later or directly to me is fine and appreciated. The other thing that I would like to do is I would like to, if the commission's comfortable with this, start talking with both the North Slope Neighborhood Board of Directors and the appropriate folks in the Wedge too to talk a little bit about public outreach heading into our pressure time, which is to try to get this ready for hearing in December. Obviously if we totally missed the mark, this is a continual improvement, use the process term issue. Both in terms of what people think and how the objectives of the neighborhood based on what seem to be articulated, the objectives of the commission from a homeowner's perspective is understandable and in plain language. From the construction or design perspective, is it useful in any way if you're working with a client? All of those things, because this is both a document that is to guide the commission in its decision making, but also to provide homeowners, property owners, with a fair sense of what to expect if they are designing a project bringing it to the commission. So with that.
Oh, I would recommend the outreach because, I have to commend Marshall for the time and thoughtfulness he's put into this. And yes, I think since ex officio Buffington is here, have you had time to review it, or do you know anyone?
I have. Do a few editorial changes, but other than that, looks fine to me.
All right.
I agree it would be very important to get together with the residents and the neighborhood to go over this.
Yeah, and we want to do that. At this point, typically what I ask, from the commission is just to kind of a consent to do that, to start going public with something. I'd like you guys to see and have a certain comfort level, even if it's a draft working document, before we go out and start causing problems. So at any rate, I have.
Are there any objections? I don't believe there would be. No. All right. You have our blessing.
Okay.
Is that item taken care of as far as commissioners are concerned at this time? All right. On to the next item, which is 6B, rescission of landmarks designation discussion. We sort of had this in this discussion in the ARC meeting, but this is a more formalized review of those comments.
So this is kind of odd, but it is something that's been on my mind for a long time. We have in the code in 2011, by the request of City Council, was included a process and procedure, which is actually attached to the staff report, about the procedure for removing something from the landmarks register, or was it a fancy word we call it, rescission. And there are a number of criteria that can be used on both if an individual property owner, for some reason, for specific reasons, wants to remove their property from the historic register, there's an avenue for them to make that request for the commission and the criteria for the commission to consider it. And there's also a mechanism in there for the commission to actually choose to amend its own historic register, as you guys are the stewards of the historic register. And so, for instance, if a property owner were to ask the commission or request the commission consider removal, there are criteria such as economic hardship, and that's defined in the code. Catastrophic loss, the building is burned down or burned to an extent that is not feasible or there's not the ability to rebuild it. Procedural error, which is that we have a document, some way to show that the commission somehow, or staff probably, made a mistake regarding the public hearing notice, the legislative process, or whatever, and that it really shouldn't have been placed on there for that reason. That's just our, you know, if we make a mistake, obviously we have to deal with that. The Landmarks Commission also has two criteria for it to use for requesting its own amendments, and that includes that the property no longer exists. We have a number of those examples, meaning the property exists, but the building that was designated on it, of course, is not. Or that retaining the building on the historic register, and this is kind of the commission's open-ended reasoning, does not further the cause of the goals of the comprehensive plan or the historic preservation ordinance. And there are times when I'm sure the commission may come to have a different perspective on a building that was placed on the register. And so at any rate, there are a couple of buildings, and we sought guidance from the Architectural Review Committee on this, sort of as a walk-on item because it's come up. I'm going to pass that. There's a couple of examples, and at this point I'm not looking for the commission to make a decision, but more we're looking for guidance on this. And so I'm just going to organize my pictures here a little bit. The example of a building that no longer exists is a Japanese language school. Just pass this around. That's not the Japanese language school. That building was torn down, I believe, in 2006, thereabouts. It was designated. Now, all properties that are placed on the historic register in Tacoma are placed by council resolution. And so we have not requested for that to be
resized.
Yeah, resized, right? Repeal of the resolution, or rescinding. That's what I'm saying. Rescinding the resolution. And so, while we have removed references to that property in our historic data layers that we use for permitting, and same with the Luzon building, it's removed from the data layer. So if you pull it up and look on, do a map search on it, you won't see that dot anymore on the map. But however, technically, it is still listed on the Landmarks Register. We've taken it off. So what we do is we put a council request and have that revealed. Japanese language school is one, Luzon is obviously another one, and those are kind of no-brainers. The second category of building, and there's a couple of examples, and I just passed around one. That building right there is the Nash Company sales building at 933 Market, just across 9th Street from us. That was placed on the historic register when I very, very first started. I was actually tag teaming with Jennifer Schreck, who was my predecessor in the office at that time. And so this was a building that came forward. There was a desire from the property owners to use special tax valuation and do a certain design on the building. The building itself had been modified several times over the course of its existence. It had a storefront system that dated from the 1950s. It at one time had more of a traditional storefront. One time it had been open. It had been a car dealership, a grocery store, and so forth. And the Art Deco pilasters and sort of configuration on the front of the building dated obviously from the 40s, and was sort of the latest design iteration of it. So the building had some integrity issues to begin with. The owner submitted some plans. The Landmarks Commission went back and forth with the owner a couple of times on those plans, and ultimately it was built out. The build-out, as you can see, the intention was to have clerestory transom windows over storefront doors, kind of give a traditional retail front to it, and they added a hardy plank and wood canopy to the top of it. They used the original lag bolts for the chains to hold it up. Well, not original, but old. And if you go take a walk by, you'll see that the execution design is really not quite probably what anybody had in mind at that time. And so the building itself is just kind of in a here nor there state. In the sort of the professional opinion of staff, it has very, very little historic integrity, either on its primary facade, even more on the alley Alley Side 2. It's a very typical commercial building. It's a brick and concrete box. And so this would be an example, for instance, of a building that it's an older building. It obviously someone could come along and take a historic photo, rebuild it to whatever they wanted to rebuild it to, including an accurate a certain period of time historic restoration. But as it currently exists, it doesn't have that character. And so, you know, looking at the building now, sort of is my opinion as the preservation officer, the building like this actually probably does not meet the criteria in the Landmarks Code. There's another building like that, and we have a couple of examples. There's a second one, which is the Karma Manufacturing Building down on, I think it was East 25th Street. And that building is, if you go down to the Sound Transit Commuter Station, you'll see it's covered with blue corrugated paneling. And that building is was a factory. The first structure on site was, I think, probably in the mid-1880s or mid to late 1880s was constructed, and then just kind of, as industrial buildings are wont to do, kind of started expanding. And the construction and modification of the building, you know, just went on right through the 1960s. There's an outfit called the Landmark Development Group back in 2007, I believe. They intended to put that on the, they wanted to get it on the National Register too and take both tax credits and special tax valuation to do a development project. They presented plans where, you know, hoping to uncover, based on some very, very fuzzy photographs, restore some of the historic characters, got some drop siding on the outsides of, during the Landmarks nomination process to draw certain sections of it to see if, you know, what was there. And there was some there, and there was a hodgepodge. It was really sort of economic development driven. The project isn't going to happen at this point. But the another sort of an aside is it was rejected by the advisory council and the state architectural historian for listing on the National Register. And I don't even know if it made the state register either. And so, at any rate, that would be another building. In the case of, I mean, it's the process that led it to being designated on the historic register. We don't take this lightly at all. I mean, you know, I wouldn't want to see the commission get into the habit of removing things from the register, or have staff get into the habit of suggesting removal of things from the register. So there are specific, you know, reasons for this that I would definitely want to draw a box around and keep tightly to the criteria and articulate those. But that's an example of, and I don't think really actually off the top of my head, there's very many others at all that I can think of that sort of are in this situation. This building is sort of an approximate one because the current owners do want to completely board up the front of this building. It's a comedy club. They want a dark box. They want a theater box, a black box. If you look at the scaling on the clerestory windows, you know, for some reason they were not able to make the different windows the same size. Some are narrower, some are wider. It's kind of odd. It's kind of like your teeth are different sizes than your head. So at any rate, staff would recommend, well, both were advising these property owners on this, and that I've been thinking about this building for a long time because it's really actually bothered me the entire time I've worked here. We're both advising the property owners, but also, thinking that this is a chance to batch there's several properties together, and sort of do I don't want to say cleanup, but kind of tie up some loose ends on the Landmarks Register that currently exists. And so, I guess at this point, I'm not asking for any action from the commission, but I would like to hear thoughts, guidance. I know when we talked to the Architectural Review Committee folks who were present before, there was some caution, I think, expressions of, we're not going to be cavalier about this, and we really need to look very closely at the criteria that will be employed going forward. But I didn't also, at least for specific, buildings and for these specific situations, I didn't detect a heck no, you cannot do that. This is a really bad precedent. So at any rate, at this point, just, any thoughts, what I do hear from the commission is also going to be used both to guide property owners in these questions in the future. Like I said, besides the two buildings that I mentioned, I can't really think of any others on the register that meet these criteria, or the buildings where we no longer have a building, but just the land underneath. And the, I guess, and for administrative reasons too, I mean, the property owner can always come to this commission and request on their own behalf removal of a building. But however, when I think it's an appropriate, consideration, then I would actually prefer that the commission take its own action on things for, I think, some fairly clear reasons. But so that, anyways, from that, you know, at that point, I guess I'll shut up, and if anybody has any thoughts, I'd be happy to.
Well, then, are the rescission provisions applicable only to individually listed structures as opposed to structures in a historic district?
Yes.
So someone in a historic district could take advantage of these procedures?
No, within the historic district, the two things, I mean, we don't really have a procedure for modifying a district inventory other than the commission's discretion. And then, of course, if someone wanted to go through the Landmarks Commission, the Planning Commission, the City Council, do a boundary adjustment on the historic district. But this is for individual landmarks. We've got 165 properties on the register. Well, count the ones that are demolished, just we've taken off like 170, maybe. So, but no, this would only be for the individuals.
Also, I mentioned, as you said, at the Architectural Review Committee, Marshall was particularly adamant that the commission be cautious in proceeding with any kind of rescission procedures, and fear that it becomes too easy or too widespread, and we set precedents that will all of a sudden get flooded with lots and lots of rescissions. And I agree with that. I think that some individual cases, like the one you mentioned at the Comedy Club, that's one thing. But we want to make sure that we are very careful about proceeding and taking anything off of the revision.
That's one reason why I think where there's certain cases where it's appropriate, like I said, the commission sort of initiates its own process. And if the commission doesn't agree, obviously, I'm on a certain property, like say the Carmen building, for instance. Well, we're not going to take that one up now or something like that. But I think that there is a very definite difference between someone filing a request, a property owner with the commission, the commission taking a look and saying, well, you know what, these buildings or these properties probably shouldn't come off. And so, anyways, on that point.
I think generally I'm in favor of this, although I agree with the caution approach. I'm a little concerned about criteria number one, the economic hardship, just thinking back to the issues we've had around that, around vinyl windows and what is economic hardship? Did
right.
the person prove economic hardship? Did they bring significant receipts? Did we look at their income? Did we not look at their income? What about their rental income? What about their assets versus their income? So I guess two thoughts about that. One is, should it be there? And two, I'm thinking about the word undue economic hardship. I'm wondering, I understand there's a definition, but I'm thinking, is undue a strong enough word? Should it be significant? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter what that word is, but undue strikes me as like, well, shucks, it's kind of a nuisance. I'm kind of struggling with this one, but it doesn't sound like it's like this is life, not life and death, but truly a significant hardship. Those are my two thoughts. Should it be there? And if it is going to be there, is there a way to really tighten up and make it a truly significant hurdle which you have to pass?
Yep, I'm agree with that. I see economic hardship as something that pertains to the people who are living in the house and not the historic property. And historic property doesn't get into historic. Hardship of people who are living in it different, and I don't see that relates to the status. I think we should take a close look at that and see if we can redefine it.
I agree. There's kind of to that point is it's a lot less expensive to maintain something than to go on with full repair and replacements, or if you let it go to the point where it's deteriorated. And using Luzon is a great example, and you just let it sit and rot it wasn't savable. And you could have spent a much smaller dollar amount to keep that thing viable. And so, you know, through deterioration, it became economically unviable, and it became an economic hardship, if you will. So we need to be really careful about that, because that's a slippery slope that you don't want to open that door for somebody to just let things decay and then go, sure. Oh, it's an economic hardship to try and get it back to where it was.
That economic hardship thing was a subject of ongoing debate back in the 2010, 2011, when we were going through that code. This particular section was actually written by our consulting group for the delisting. Like you said, you know, when delisting was proposed, it was one of those almost like a rabbit hole problems. So I think based on these comments, it sounds as though probably in the next available code amendment round, we might want to take a look at tightening up that language and defining the economic hardship part further. And teasing it out. And I think at our next meeting too, we'll also just provide for the commission's information, the process that it refers to here at 13.5046 the commission takes to make that finding of economic hardship. Yeah. Also,
yeah. And sorry to interrupt, Bruce, but there's, I mean, to put it in context, in the broader scale, there's not an economic hardship provision for sort of general building code items. I mean, it's, you know, a commercial building has to provide an ADA ramp, regardless of whether they can viably afford it or not. You know, so there's not that sort of level of consideration given within the building code. So I think we need to be really careful about allowing it into kind of the provisions for landmarks.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I'm thinking back to sort of the fundamental underpinnings of the case law that say the historic preservation is not a hardship unto itself. And that's actually a tough one to find too, because a lot of times, and I think this is totally, I mean, this is something that I always have to keep in mind, is that a lot of times it's not the maintenance of maintaining the building that's causing the problems. When someone wants to do an elective project on a building and then their material costs are higher than they want them to be, or their workmanship costs are higher than they want them to be, and that's not a hardship when you're proposing a new project, like putting an addition on a building. I mean, it may make it more expensive, but when you're proposing to spend $100,000 on a addition to a building, it's hard to claim hardship.
Right, and you can't. I mean, you can't just sort of leave out an electrical panel because it's expensive. It's part of the code. It's part of what is in the standards that exist for buildings. Okay. So there's just an extra layer of standards that apply to historic buildings.
So we'll provide the full code reference on this, and then maybe over the next several meetings, start talking because what we can do is we can queue it up if appropriate for the Planning Commission's review this next spring, and get it into the cycle if we want to do that. I mean, it may be something where economic hardship is completely removed from the section of the code, because by definition, there's nothing in the code that all city codes operate under this assumption, which is there's a constitutional thing. The city cannot, no local, you know, regulations can cause an undue burden on the reasonable use of property, and that just goes without saying. We don't have to put it in a code, and so every, you know, courts will make that finding and overturn. So I think that maybe that's something to consider too, because I've really, to be honest with the commission, I've heard very few positive comments about the economic hardship provision generally. So it's just a slippery slope. So.
Questions or other questions or comments from commissioners? From staff?
I've talked enough.
All right. We are at the end of our meeting, and we have a few minutes for announcements if commissioners would like to avail themselves.
Did you say avail or reveal?
Either.
Very much. I meant to say this for a couple. When I visited my cousin in England 2 months ago, I'll be very brief. So just bought an 1800 stone building in Devon and was going to change it and turn it into his residence. But the only thing that struck me about that was apparently in England you can waive or have refunded, I'm not quite sure what the process is, it's essentially the sales tax, the value added tax, for any work done to, maintain the historic building. And it's very different than our approach in giving a tax credit, that you get the benefit for basically as soon as you go and buy a,
right,
buy
no
a piece
delay.
Of material. And I'm certainly not going to advocate that the whole process for economic incentives in the United States be altered, but it struck me as just a completely different view. Unfortunately, in the current, apparent, I don't know if this happened or not, the current economic conditions in England, they're getting ready potentially to rescind that. So they may have no incentive. Thank you.
If there are no other comments, we are adjourned.
I've heard people talk a little bit about having some sort of like sales tax rebate or credit for historic preservation work.